So I'm Jason Zander. I run the engineering team for Azure and formerly ran the Visual Studio and .NET team. So for those of you that have returned, I'm actually in a new team doing something different this time around. But you'll be able to see all the great content from Visual Studio and ALM and that kind of stuff coming up this week. What I want to talk to you about in this hour that we have is about modern business applications in particular, and especially how you can make these things go on top of Azure and on top of the Microsoft Cloud. My experience is a lot of people, you know, may have seen Azure, may have played a little bit with it. We've got a bunch of new functionality in there. I think over 60% of our attendees this time, maybe higher, are actually new to the conference. So I want to make sure that you have a good understanding of what we've got and how to put these things together. So that'll be our agenda for this first hour through here. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about what does this actually mean? Well, I think most of us, especially in the enterprise setting, we are now at a point where we're starting to build applications for all sorts of devices. Just one example here, many of you that have come over, I know I met Roger earlier today, who's based in the UK, I'm sure he's flying BA. If you've got some kind of a presence that you need with your customers, most likely you're having to look at a plethora of devices, smartphones, tablets, you know, touch PCs, you know, all sorts of operating systems, all sorts of forms of technology, all that kind of content. How the heck are you going to actually build applications that do well? And you've also got a lot of existing assets. You know, take BA in this particular case, probably has a very, very large investment in the reservation system. You know, everything's up and running on premises. They're good, they're happy with it, but I need this kind of presence out here. So how do I actually go accomplish that? This is a good example of an application, in this case, being able to access check-in records using the smart device that I have, multiple different vendors here, that kind of content. Very similar here in banking. In this particular example, Bank of America. We might have examples once again, you know, Windows Phone, Android, iOS, different displays, but you know, same kind of functionality that I want. So if these are the sorts of things that are being asked for, then how are you going to do the construction for that? And what's the best, you know, application patterns and you know, how can I help you go build these things better? Well, first for me, it's always interesting to start off thinking about what is the top-level pattern I'm trying to accomplish. So step number one, you know, we talk a lot about connected devices, basically saying you're going to have these different form factors, different screen sizes, but pretty much they're all going to be connected. And going forward, everything is going to be touch. Even our laptops are going to be there. We're getting there right now, plus your tablets, et cetera. So I want that kind of immersive experience. I want to have a nice touch interface, and I need to be up and running and connected. So that's pretty much a pattern we expect. At the same time, these devices, you know, with BYOD, they're no longer just things that I've got my work device and I've got some stuff that I use at home. We pretty much have these things in our pocket all day long, right? So when I spend some time in the afternoon, maybe I'm off to lunch, I'm probably going to go off and go check, you know, my Twitter feed, see how that's going, see how my friends are doing on posts and updates, that sort of thing. If I'm on the train headed home in the evening, I might be using it to figure out a movie, dinner reservations, take your pick. But during the day, I'm reading my corporate email off of Exchange. I'm actually trying to go figure out where is the next conference room I need to be at the next meeting. It's all sitting there in one device. So having some federation and being able to do this kind of people-centric piece that recognizes that I'm both an individual and I do stuff outside of work, but you know, I also when I'm at work and a lot of this stuff starts to blend pretty easily. So I want to have good access to these internal services. Now, in order to pull this together, I've got to have some kind of infrastructure. So if you look, you know, we talk a lot about continuous services. What does that mean? Well, it means I'm going to have software that's running in the cloud someplace, some kind of accessible, you know, piece, whether it's existing machinery that I've set up, my own data center, workloads that are already there, or if I am putting a cloud presence, or actually both. And I'm going to show you some examples of how to actually take advantage and do both. I can use infrastructure as a service. I've got private cloud, public cloud. Wow, there's a ton of options in here. But no matter what, when I make this thing available, I want to be able to manage all of it, keep that kind of sane in my world, and I also need to expose it. And so being able to easily come in and take some of this data and securely, reliably, and at scale, make that available so that when I have these client form factors, I can actually make that business logic available. I don't have to go rewrite it, you know, basically four times for four different mobile operating systems as an example, plus my desktop, whatever that looks like. But instead, I can concentrate my business logic more likely on the back end, use web services and, you know, basically standards-based infrastructure, REST, JSON, OData, be able to expose that data out in a way that it can plug in, because no matter which of these client devices I'm going to, they're going to have some kind of a REST API support, some kind of a JSON parser, security, you know, SSL, these sorts of things. Those technologies are going to be there, so it's going to make it easier for me. Finally, I also want to have some kind of identity federation. Two things on identity. Identity federation for this piece is, look, I have multiple IDs, and all of us as large vendors, Microsoft, Google, as well as Facebook, et cetera, we are providing a lot of support for protocols like OAuth, OAuth 2, the ability for me to use my identity so I don't have to go create, 45 different user accounts. I don't know about you, but I hit a consumer site, and it asks me to go register and create something. When I'm just buying one thing, I more often not go up and click the Xbox up in the corner. Get rid of it. It's like, I don't want yet another ID. So having the ability to federate and pull these things through in a secure way, and that's pretty much, as vendors, we're all kind of coming together, figuring that out, and we've got support there ourselves. We also want to make sure that you have access to the identity graph. It turns out, 93-95% of employees and enterprises are in Active Directory. And with Azure Active Directory, we make it possible for you to have that same federated access in the cloud, so now I can have my identity there as well. So now I get a nice kind of seamless transition between those two. So this is kind of, a top level. So if I were able to take advantage of my existing infrastructure, make it available through web standards, do it securely, be able to robustly scale this out, now I actually have a nice computing platform. And I can start meeting the demands of some of these new applications that are being asked for. Now, I could actually probably spend an entire day worth of a conference like this just double-clicking on all these boxes and going through forms, packages, and strategies and those sorts of things as well. We actually don't have all day, so what I want to do today is focus the rest of my talk more on Azure, the team that I'm now on, and talk a little bit more about this bottom layer here and how I can help you get up and running so that when you have your clients, we can go ahead and get them connected and make that work. I should also mention, of course, this last one on here, once I pull all the system in, you've got a lot of code and a lot of team members and probably lots of small teams. So again, obviously, the ALM Summit, application lifecycle management, tying this back in, how do I do builds, how do I get continuous integration, deployment, pull my teams together, run my backlogs, and do this in the continuous way we talked about, which is we're constantly shipping. So how do I make that whole thing go? Well, I start off talking a little bit about Microsoft Azure. So a few things, especially for this audience, and many of us are working in an enterprise setting, either as a vendor, consultant, et cetera, or actually representing our enterprise. What are we doing? Well, we're building out what we call the Cloud OS. We are giving you all sorts of flexibility. I'm going to show you some examples. We will give you virtual machines. We will give you mega scale support. We are going to build this on top of our own infrastructure. And so the data centers that we stand up worldwide are running hosted Exchange, Office 365, Azure itself, of course, as well as Bing. And we're basically shredding the entire internet on a very regular basis with petabytes of data flowing through the system. Those sort of investments mean that we've got worldwide data centers and we're standing these things up for mega scale. We're also doing it with our enterprise software. So my guess is nearly everybody in here is using some kind of enterprise software from Microsoft, whether it's Exchange, SharePoint on the back end, Windows Server, System Center, take your pick, SQL Server. I mean, all of these products we are bringing to bear as part of this Cloud OS, and we're working to give you the flexibility. So when we build up all the support, we build up the robust scale, we bring the software on top of that, and then we're going to make it easy for you to start getting your workloads and all of your content, moved over. So it's, mostly on the cloud. It's a matter of when, not if. So how do you actually make that transition? How do you get started? Those sorts of things. Now, what you'll hear us talk about with Windows Azure in particular, three things that we tried to frame everything around. First, we want to have a lot of flexibility. And I just described a lot of flexibility, right? Being able to have combinations of data center strategies. I've already got a data center. I may have a partner data center. And I may want public cloud. And I may have workloads that I want to actually, work. And frankly, I might even be kicking the tires and trying to understand which strategy works for me. So flexibility is important. Open is important as well because, as much as I'd love everybody just using Microsoft technology, that's not the world that we're in. And so we need to make sure we've got great support for the technologies that you're using. That goes for building websites, whatever, kind of content you need to go, to APIs and middleware components that you might be using. And then we also want to make sure that everything is very solid. That means mega scale. That means, again, if I can run my business on it, if I can put hundreds of petabytes of data across this stuff and go shred it through there, I'm going to guess that we're going to have enough functionality that when I make it available to you, you're going to find something in there that you're going to like. So, Azure, Our public cloud offering, we're actually right now in about 6 different locations for the public piece of this, actually 8. We have both East and West Coast of the United States, North and South of the United States, as well as 2 locations in Europe, as well as 2 in Asia. The lighter colored circles that you see there are actually CDN POPs, points of presence around the globe, so we can actually help you with caching and those sort of things. And that's physically the assets that we have today, with more coming. And so you should expect that we're in this one to be worldwide, have full presence, and make, you know, anything you're going to need, because I think we have, you know, people probably from, you know, most continents in this room today. We want to make sure you have the right kind of support for that. So expect us to continue to build this out over time. Now, with that, I want to jump into some more specifics. Let's double-click down to the next level and start talking about how can we build some of these modern applications and, you know, basically use the leverage the cloud to be able to handle that. First thing I want to talk about is virtual machines. This is the first type of support that we will give you. So if you've virtualized workloads already in your own data center, and that's how you're running it, this gives you a very easy entry point to start using the cloud. With our virtual machine supports, as infrastructure as a service, we're already out in preview right now. We've got tremendous interest and a lot of growth on that. And we are basically coming in for a landing on this. So it's in preview now, but we're very, very close to shipping this. This would be the point where, you know, the captain's telling you to put your seat tables back up and tuck up your seat, because I see the runway and here we are. That's about where we're sitting. That's my easy way of telling you it's close without actually giving you a date, just in case you didn't notice. But it's coming. We're ready to go. And you can actually go off and use it right now. 3 different things about virtual machines. First, we do have flexibility here. As I mentioned, the open thing. So you can use a combination of Windows Server, Linux distributions. Basically, if you can stick it into a virtual machine and create a VHD, you can use it on top of Azure and go create a virtual machine. Flexible workload support, it's your machine. Once you get it, you get a public IP address. You're the admin. You get to take care of patching it. You can install any software you want. So if you go set it up, you can go put SQL Server on it. I could go set up a Linux machine and go put Mongo, Couch on top of it if I want a NoSQL implementation. Take your pick. We'll make that basically work for you. We also have virtual private networking, so VPN support. So if you create a set of these things, I can actually create my virtual network and pull them together, so now I can have a set of them working, and I can also take those same VMs and I can securely have that connect back to my on-premises data center as well, so I can have a proper kind of connection between the two. And that's given me a, you know, basically a significant amount of opportunity. So let's go ahead and take a look at what this is. And so for today, I want to start off, first of all, inside of the portal. Right here. And the portal makes it really easy to get going. If you haven't already tried this, it's just windowsazure.com. And we have all sorts of information up here. So if you have an engineering team, you'll probably find, you know, Java, .NET, Node, take your pick. It's part of the open piece. So your development teams can get started and try that out. In addition to that, if you are curious about how to get going, what's this going to cost me, we do have full pricing calculators in here. We just talked about virtual machines. So let me pull up the VM tab. As you can see, I could just go ahead and say an extra small, go add an instance. And that's going to cost me, you know, 0.013 cents an hour, so 936 a month. Similar thing for a Linux VM if I wanted to create that. So, you know, basically take your pick. The cool thing about this, we have a free trial that's available. It's basically 90 days. It won't charge you extra after that, and you have to, you know, then you can decide what you want to move forward with. So if you haven't already tried it, just go up there and click free trial, and you're good to go. And I'd also tell anyone in this audience who's already an MSDN subscriber through your company, you already have access. Part of your MSDN subscription includes a certain number of hours compute and storage capacity so that you can use Azure as part of your developments for evaluation. So this makes it really simple to get going, much, much simpler than going through a really long, protracted procurement, you know, kind of process. I can go kick the tires and go try it out. Now, our portal itself, we make it very easy for you to get going on here as well. These are all the sorts of things that I can do inside of Azure. We just start off with virtual machines. So creating a virtual machine is actually incredibly simple. I just go up to the site here. I'm logged in. I'll go ahead and click on New. You can see we come in here, virtual machine. I can do a quick create. Let's do a ALM Summit 2013Z. I can now pick any of the operating systems that I want. These are basically the quick create versions. I can also import, you know, templates that I've already got if my company has a set that I'd like to go use. In this case, I'll just pick Windows Server, which you see Ubuntu and SUSE Linux, and, you know, take your pick in the list. And I can go pick, you know, what kind of size. Maybe I'll make it medium with 2 cores, you know, that kind of thing. Let me give it a password. Okay, and I can locate it in the regions. And you saw the regions were on the map, so it gives me the opportunity to figure out where would I like to have it. That way, if I'm in Europe, for example, I can choose to go ahead and put it in Europe. If in the United States, I can pick a region there and just make sure everything's in the same spot. And just click Create, and that's it. At this point, what we're doing is we're actually going in and allocating the resources that you asked for. We're going to go get your virtual machine set up. The system will now turn around and provision the operating system and then make it available for you. Very straightforward. As you can see, I've already had a couple in the interest of time. So let me go ahead and click on this this first one. This is one that I created actually last night, I believe. As you can see, it's very easy to figure out, you know, what is my VM doing. I've got, right now we're pulling in the statistics from the particular machine, so you can see what the disk usages, et cetera, how many cores that I've got, that's easy to dial up, and how many disks that I've got associated with the device. Here you can see the statistical information that's present. I can also go in and do things like attach, add an empty disk. This is simple. If I want to add a disk to this particular machine, just go ahead and we'll take the default names, go ahead and click OK. And what that's going to do now is go ahead and create a disk on top of our storage and make that available for me. Here's an updated in progress. And so it's in the middle of actually pulling that through. So that makes it actually really simple. So the next thing I can do here is, now that the VM is in there, it's getting created, I just want to go ahead and connect to it. So I'll go ahead and click connect and we'll RDP. I can use SSH or your favorite, you know, connection client if it's Linux, and go pull that back in. I'll just go ahead and say open. And this makes it really simple. There's no copying of keys or any, like, where did I put that thing, you know, to get in. I'll just type in my password and say, sure, go ahead and connect me. And this is basically just using that public VIP that I had. I can put any DNS name on top of that that I'd like. And so now in this particular case, you know, the application will log in. And this is the first time I've used this particular machine. And so it's going to go ahead and set it up for first time. But it is essentially just Windows Server. So I can now do anything that I want. I can go in, go find that disk that I attached, format it with whatever format I want, start installing software, whatever I'd like to do. And I can start setting up my virtual network, you know, those sorts of things. So you can see this is actually really, really simple to get going and do your configuration and those sort of things. The uptime here is very, very quick. Now, the nice thing about this, too, is everything I just showed you in the portal is designed to make it super simple to get going. We also support all the management APIs through REST APIs, so you can write your own code to do management, creation, any sort of stuff that you want around anything inside of the system. And then we also support command lines. So if I wanted to write PowerShell scripts, for example, to go spin things up or down, you know, I could do that as well. I find the portal is actually a pretty easy way, especially if you haven't used it before and you want to start get going, or if you're doing a departmental kind of thing and I just, you know, got 200 people to get up and running, you know, piece of cake, let's just go ahead and do that. All right, so this is our first example. I'll let that one finish and we'll head back into the slides here for a moment. That's our first example of, you know, getting up and running, where I can just do raw, where I own it, I get to pick how to go do it. I could now start moving my workloads and making that available. Now that becomes my backend for my device application. I wanted to share a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes with this. So I mentioned portability, that flexibility attribute that we're looking for. Well, first of all, what did we just do there? Well, we have the public cloud, that's Windows Azure, and I probably have my own data center where I have my own VHDs, and it's already up and running. Well, we want to make it super simple for you. So if you have existing VHDs, you can just go ahead and pull them up into Azure and create your virtual machine, attach it to that disk, and you're up and ready to go. So I now have that. I can also go the other direction. So if I happen to create something up in the cloud and I decide, you know, actually this one's growing up, or I need to pull it back on premises, I need to pull it in with something else in my IT department, take your pick, just go ahead and move it. So this kind of portability is important. The other thing we found is that in some cases you may actually be working with other partner data centers. Some cases this is a geography thing. I actually have perhaps a hoster that's in my geography, and for regulatory reasons or other reasons, I'd like to have that running, you know, more localized for whatever the workload is. Well, then there's other service providers that can do that. And because we're building, again, on our standard enterprise software, Windows Server, System Center, these sorts of things, and it is just, you know, Hyper-V, you know, virtualization in this case, I can move my content back and forth that way as well. So what does that really give me? We help you from getting into the lock-in. So you're not in a mode where it's like, shoot, I put all my stuff up in the public cloud. Now I need to go move it. What do I do? Right, and this is really, really, really simple. So again, that's part of this flexibility of how do I get started, what can I try multiple different ways to crack this one, that's your opportunity. a little bit also on the technical side behind this. The VMs that I'm running on there and I'm logging into, we're not actually attaching local disk at the node level. We're actually using Windows Azure Storage to back all this up. Why is that interesting? Well, storage itself contains a whole bunch of redundancy to help you. We talk about this kind of solid attribute of, you know, rock solid and scale. Part of that is us working to try and make sure that you have high availability for your data and your content by default. You're not having to implement a lot of extra infrastructure for that. What that means is that VHD, actually, and it's in a region, I think I picked US East, so someplace on the East Coast of the United States, that VM just got created. Our storage system will actually take the VHD and locate it in three separate clusters. So it's actually going to be replicated three times, you know, basically synchronous replication across all three clusters. So if we did have some kind of problem, hardware's going to fail. You're going to have power problems. You're going to have a disk that crashes. You know, we all know this, right? We run our own stuff all the time. You know it's going to fail. If that does happen, our storage system will actually go spin up a new instance and make sure that you have three at all points in time. I didn't have to do anything extra. I just created the disk, I shoved it up there, Azure takes care of the rest for me. Now, the other thing this helps out with is we actually replicate it as well. So our default when you create this is geo-replication. So in this case, we'll actually asynchronously replicate the same content to another region. In this case, I was in East Data Center, so it would actually get replicated to West Data Center. That means if we have something like, you know, the Superstorm Sandy, you know, take your pick, natural disasters, those sorts of issues that kick in. I think we all saw what happened with data centers in those circumstances. Well, we've actually got the data backed up for you, so we can actually fail back over. So that means there's three copies on the right, there's three copies on the left, and I'm able to get that kind of continuity between the two. So nothing extra for you to do. This is all basically just the way that it's built into the system. All right, so that's virtual machines. Go ahead and give those a try and get up and running on it. That's our first example of how to build some backends and have that. Now, I want to move into the next example, which is websites. So one of the common things you might be doing is actually standing up a website presence. And we showed a couple different examples. One, for those applications, the check-in reservation system, the banking app, those sort of things, I'm most likely going to have some kind of consumer-facing website. So I need a place to go put that. But we also showed a programmatic layer. So REST, JSON, OData, take your pick. But I want to be able to expose my business logic in a way that web and rich clients can actually consume. So how do I go about creating those two? Well, we've created the website service on top of Azure to make this one also very straightforward to get going. First of all, you can build using any technology you want. We obviously have ASP.NET, so I can use .NET 4.0 and 4.5, especially 4.5 with a lot of the asynchronous support we just added. I can use Node.js, I can use PHP. These are the ones we just have off the top. And of course, we'll have more that come over time. And of course, I could create a VM. I could install whatever I want on it and set up my own website if you've already got it. But if I don't have something, I got a new project that I want to get up and running, you know, do you want to do all of that stuff, or would you like to just go create the website? Because that's actually the real work that I care about. We make it easy for you to deploy your application very quickly, and we support multiple types of deployment. So if you want to just do plain old FTP, you can go do that. We also support Git. So if you happen to be using Git for publishing, and you got a Git repository that you're branching and using, you can push from the client and go make that work on the back end, and we'll integrate it. And of course, as a guy who spent a lot of time in Visual Studio, we have full support for Team Foundation Server. In fact, we have actually in Team Foundation Service, the online component. I think you'll probably see more of that during the week. And in that particular case, we have even richer support. So I can actually publish with my source code. And if I do a check-in, I can turn on continuous integration so that I can go do the builds. And when the TFS team actually has a build system in the cloud, which means when I submit my check-in, we have build as a service up there. It'll pull it out, do the builds, run your test cases, validate everything. If that works, you can choose to turn on continuous deployment as well. And we have customers that are doing, you know, several thousand basically CIs and CDs a month on top of this technology at this point. So when we talk about continuous services, being able to rapidly, especially like a stateless website, the state of the art today, you should be able to ship that thing at least once a day with A/B and flight testing, split testing, whatever terminology you want to use. You should be able to do all of that stuff. And we do enable that. The cool thing on this one is you can get started for free. Anybody can walk up to the site, create an application, go ahead and publish it. We won't charge you anything for it. But if you do get popular and you start growing, you can add some more content on top of it. Now, let me show you an application I actually built over the holidays. They don't let me write as much code anymore. They give you that, you know, fancy titles. You don't get to write code. So I spend my holidays writing code. So what did I want to go do? Well, I wanted to actually go play with the stuff myself. And so one of the things that I did just to try and pick an application that was right sized, this is our Azure dashboard. It kind of shows you the status of how the system's actually up and running. One of the things that I did is I used that same pattern, and I'll show you just, I'm not going to write a ton of code here, but I will show you some of the architectural components so you get a feeling for how it's stitched together. One of the things I did was actually go off and used the API controller out of MVC, ASP.NET. It makes it really simple for me to be able to expose REST data and REST APIs back out on the internet. So this is my version of that. I'm not trying to compete with the main site, so don't worry about that so much. The part that's actually interesting, though, is because I added an API controller, if I just go into API status, that'll go ahead and run my backend service. And when I go ahead and open this, you'll see that I have basically a whole bunch of JSON coming back from a REST API, returning all that status information from my dashboard. Okay, very simple. How the heck do you actually do that? Well, in my case, this is here's my website. I basically just use an API controller. So this inherits from controller. I can basically come back and say, hey, I'd like to pull back the status. This is the front view portion of this. Here's the backend component for REST API. API controller, do a get. I can do gets by numbers, et cetera. I'm using link and some of our other support there. So I basically just run a link query against my data, format a JSON packet. We do all the rest of it. So it creates the data packet, sends it back, and now all of a sudden I've got JSON and REST APIs that are very simple. All right, what the heck do you do with that? Well, now you start writing your rich client applications. So in this particular case, I'll do a refresh here. This is a Windows 8 app that I wrote. Nice and touch-friendly, big kind of tiles on my Surface. Of course, it all kind of fits. I can scroll through, go click any one of these. Application itself is not meant to be super interesting. It's more just kind of the pattern. So if I go to Northern Europe, I can see it looks like things are going pretty well. Navigate through the entire site. Okay, once again, very simple and easy to get straight to get going. So how do you do that? Well, a couple of things. First, if I want to go build something like this and go try it out, I'll go back up to the websites tab over here. And the first thing I'm going to do is do my new. And like we talked about before, very simple. We'll do an ALM Summit 2013 Z. Let's try that. Go ahead and do a create on this one. And what we're basically doing is now provisioning a website up on Azure. So, and we handle it. We do a multi-tenant website solution for that. We'll go ahead and take care of how many copies, where it's at, what operating system. We'll do the patching underneath and that kind of stuff. Look, I just want the website. That was the interesting piece for me. So, as you can see here, my site's already been created. Here it is right here. You'll notice a very kind of similar look and feel once you get going. So we'll pull back the status once this gets running. To publish on here, very simple. This is download publish profile right here. I'm going to go ahead and click that. That's going to download a little XML file that helps me figure out how to go publish back to exactly this site. If I wanted to, I can click connection strings. I don't have any here because I didn't create with a database. I could have also created the site with a database. So now I can have data, plus I can have the website component. And here you see is the easy way to set up that continuous publishing, continuous deployment. I can either just go into Git, I can go into TFS, and now associate it with my source control repository and that whole system. Now the two are tied. So when the builds come through, I can publish to the site, and I can actually use the tools. Very straightforward. Okay, so I created that. Let's go back into Visual Studio. Now I want to create that same application that you saw from before. How do I do that? And I promise I will not write a ton of code here. I just want to show you the concepts. I'm going to go in here and create a C# MVC4 application. Click OK on top of that guy. I'll make an internet application. That's fine. This basically just creates a website on my local machine. So default template, it's a model view controller. So I have a backend for the model piece. I've got controllers for business logic. And I can write any website logic that I'd like, HTML. When we create the templates, we actually automatically pull in things like jQuery and Knockout and those sort of things so that your front end package, you know, is very easy to go use. Is creating the project here. That was successful. So let's just take the default and publish it and put it back up on the internet. So if I go ahead and click publish right here, you'll see that I get a publish wizard. I had downloaded that particular site publishing information. I think it was Z right here. Go ahead and open that. What that's going to do is give me all the default data required to do the publishing. So I'll just go ahead and click publish. Now, at this point, Visual Studio will go ahead and build up my website that I just created. Presumably, I spent a couple of days making it look pretty, done a whole bunch of work on it. It'll go ahead and build it. It's going to go ahead and attach up to Azure and say, okay, let me go ACL the directories where this content needs to go because this is where I'm going to publish. It's going to go through and see, you know, this is first time setup. Second time setup, it'll look and see if I already had something in there. And I'll do a delta sort of thing. I'll push up the new files that are required for my site. Once it gets published, it can go live, and there you go. So that's literally all that's required. This site is now running live out on the internet. In this particular case, you can see it's just using azurewebsites.net. This is our Zed site that we just created. I can now go in, customize this, add REST controllers to it, that sort of thing. So this is kind of an interesting pattern because you saw the API set that I did, which was really very straightforward. But imagine that what you have is an on-premises reservation system. We'll take that airline flight system, for example. I'm not going to go rewrite that thing in the cloud. I probably have 20 years invested in that thing. I have tons of kind of tendrils around my entire enterprise for that. But I'd like to do the mobile website. That looks like a good thing I'd like to add. So being able to go in here and very quickly creating this public web presence on the website and programmatically providing access. And now because we have the security, the rest of it, I can now securely tunnel back on premises. And now I can start doing things like publish an API out of the site for my mobile phone applications that says, go find reservations for John Doe. Go check this person in. Go send them the boarding pass information. It's just a very small control plane, but it's actually going back to my existing on-premises system. That's the flexibility piece. Now I got it up and running. There's not even a ton of code, behind it, and I can do more content. Now, if I were doing that kind of system with this application, then one of the things that's going to happen is I'm very quickly going to wind up getting a lot of usage. In this case, let me go up to my site. This is the one I showed. This is actually published. The app that I showed you is actually on the Windows 8 store. You can actually go download it on Windows 8. This site that I'm running on Azure is actually the backbone behind providing the status. Again, it's not a complicated app. That kind of wasn't the point of the app building exercise. But you can see that now I have traffic coming through. This is basically people pulling up the app and saying, hey, what's the status of the service right now? So I can get statistics. I can see exactly how well the site's running. Again, I didn't have to do anything extra for that. And here's the important part. If I did write that check-in reservation system, for testing purposes, that's fine. In fact, if I just want to try it, you can see that I'm running in free. However, at some point, if I'm actually going to have, hundreds of thousands of people flying customers on top of my airline, making reservations, those sorts of things, I'm probably going to have to scale. So if I click into scale right here, actually very simple. I can go over and click shared. Shared allows me to start adding more instances because if I'm free, it's basically just me, shared hosting, multi-tenant, me and a bunch of my friends running in the same spot. If I don't have a lot of traffic, that's no big deal and I'm not paying anything for it. Shared, I can go in. Now I can do things like start giving naming records in DNS. So I can actually give it an endpoint, publish DNS and map it to the IP. Now anybody can go up and go hit that site with a particular thing, and I can also increase the number of instances. If I get really popular, I can just click it over on reserved. Now I actually get my own machine and I can start picking, well, how big would I like it? If I'm supporting an entire reservation system, I may actually take a large machine and I may spin up, maybe four instances of that, and I'll take a look and see what the traffic patterns are. It might even, vary different times of day around the globe, those sorts of things. So I can kind of do demand on that. So that's all I really have to do. Once I click save on this, it would actually now go ahead and reprovision it with the right set of content, and now I can start to scale up. If I've got some kind of a different application, like, say, in America anyway, the Thanksgiving holiday in November, super, super high traveling rate, sometimes around the December holidays, depending on where you're at, I may actually ramp up instances just by clicking this up, make sure I got enough support for it. Maybe I have the doldrums sometime in, April or something, I can ramp it back down. So you get the, pay for what you use, pick what that target looks like. It's one of the values, of course, of having the cloud. Okay? So that's really all there is to it. This was a very, very simple, just in 5 minutes, we created a new site, published it. I can go through the APIs, and I'm basically up and running. Very, very simple to get going. All right. So what's going on behind the covers? So let me explain a little bit about what we're doing on here. First of all, if I'm in the free instance, like I said, it's just all of us working together in the same pool. If I move over to shared, now we're actually starting to spread things out a little bit, give you more instances, give you the flexibility, like I mentioned, around the naming records. And I can actually have more than one that kicks in. Now I can start getting much more volume in there. And again, if I have this reserved, the case that we talked about before, when you start doing a reserved instance, now we're actually going to automatically provision the machine. And you saw how I could just go in and pick the size that I'd like to go run against it. My app gets up and running inside of there. I'm good to go. And once I start adding more instances, I'll get more than one machine. And we're basically using the same virtual machine infrastructure that we made available in the first example with virtual machines. So, you know, you can use the same thing, we can use it as well. We just really make it simple for you to, you know, build, in this particular case, in this domain, websites, so you don't have to do a bunch of, you know, configuration and the other stuff that comes with otherwise standing up a website. The other thing that's interesting about reserved, you can also, once you get reserved instances, if you do have more than one site, say that I split out my API controller from my web services front end, which is the HTML serving portion, maybe they're kind of really two routes inside of there, I can actually host both of those in these reserved instances. So I can make, you know, efficient usage of, you know, whatever resources that I signed up for. Okay, so that takes us all the way through all of our website content and what that piece looks like. Now, the next piece that I want to show you is how do we get up and running with mobile. I just gave you an example of being able to do, you know, the REST APIs and website components. Now, when you have, you know, the mobile devices, you know, several different things. On the client side, you get multiple form factors, right? We have tablets, we have smartphone factors, we've got, you know, touch ultrabooks, et cetera. And so you're probably going to have some amount of work that you're doing in order to take maximum benefit of that device. That includes, you know, anything that's on and inside of the device itself, you know, cameras and disks and all the rest of that kind of content as well. But it's also going to include, you know, getting the right kind of layout, those sort of things. So you're going to spend some time figuring out what that looks like. And by and large, you know, the pattern that, you know, we're basically suggesting for Microsoft, we're not really doing a kind of write once, you know, run all over the place. I actually personally don't think that that works incredibly well. I think the technology underneath can make sense. So your assets, some of your layouts, some of the custom controls and things like that that you write, they certainly are applicable. However, if I'm using my phone for my status application, what I don't want to do is, you know, keep scrolling, you know, for about, you know, 6 inches of screen real estate on my phone to try and figure out what the status looks like. That just doesn't make any sense. Master detail sort of things, usually you're going to have a master list on a phone. When you click it, I want a details page. But if I'm holding a 16:9 aspect ratio tablet, then more likely I'm going to put the master on the left and the details on the right. So when I click through, it makes sense. I think this is, you know, otherwise pretty obvious. We want to make sure that, you know, when you're building the stuff out on the client side, that that's super simple. So those are some of the considerations we put into it. Now, again, the question for us that we did for Azure is, how do I make this easy for you to get going? For one thing, I've got all of these devices to go target. That seems a little bit daunting. So how do I go do that piece? And then, by the way, I need it all connected back up and running. So we're going to do the web services piece, but how can I make this simple for you? One of the cool things that we've done with Azure is we've worked on something called mobile web services. And the mobile web services gives me the ability to create a service in the back end that is specifically designed to do some of the most common tasks with mobile devices. In particular, you know, data. So if I want to be able to have some data, some content on the back end, the ability to put that content in there, run business logic on the back end, and also be able to do push notifications. It's becoming, obviously, if I want to push a toast, in the case of our Windows phone and Windows devices, being able to push status updates on live tiles, those sorts of things. How do you actually go back and go do that? And basically all the big vendors have some notification kind of, you know, system to come through. How many times do you have to go write that? It's a bit of a pain in the butt. So what we want to be able to do then is also start expanding for, you know, operating system support. Right now we're supporting Windows 8, Windows Phone, and iOS. And I think you should expect that over time we will continue to add more content to this as well. So once again, let me actually show you what the heck can you do with this stuff. Well, first of all, conceptually, I think you get this. We can put data up in the back end. I can actually have identification services, so we make it, you know, secure for you to be able to log in. That gives me access from these devices on the other end. I can write the custom scripts, and then I can push the notifications back over and stick those inside of the client. All right, so let's take a look at that. Once again, everything's sitting up in the portal. That's a very, very consistent thing. You can see all the different types of things I've got. Let me go into mobile services right here. And in this case, once again, creating something new is actually very simple. Very similar pattern here. Let's do ALM Summit 2013. Z. And in this case, I have a choice on the data on the back end. I can create a new SQL database and just put a new one inside of that, or I can use an existing one if I'd like to have that. So I'm going to go ahead and, you know, create a new database instance. We'll put this in US East for a region. It's going to give me a name. I can pick the version of the server that I want on here. Let's just say a new one. We'll create that. And let's okay. And if I wanted to, I could create, you know, advanced database settings and those sort of things as well. Now, what this is doing now is creating that entire, you know, mobile service for me. So it's creating both the compute piece that's going to run, the service on the back end where I'm going to have some code that's up and running, and also creating the database component where I can actually stick the content of the data inside of that. You can see that we're basically creating all of those. I'm going to go ahead and dismiss the created portion on this one, and that's basically it. We're done. So once I get in here, I can go ahead and, yep, we're done with that. Now, we give you a quick create view, and this is especially handy if you haven't done a ton of mobile device programming yet, if you don't really have, you know, kind of ninja experts on how to go do this stuff. We make it really simple. So this is kind of a quick view. You can decide to use this if you want, but if I explore around it, a couple different things. One, I can go ahead and create data. We're going to help you get started right away. You're going to be able to, you know, actually create your application in here. You can see the Windows Store, Windows Phone, and iOS is the other one too. I can create either a new iOS app. If you have somebody that's already created a new iOS application, piece of cake. Just say connect an existing iOS app, and then we'll give you the download link for the tools, and we'll even show you how to go into Xcode and actually wire these things together so you can make it work. Now, the way this thing works, it's really simple. We're basically using a public key in order to make sure that you are who you say you are, give you access to the back end for the services you run, and then you can actually start making it work. One of the nice touches in the portal in here is that we've actually not only shown you how to go into the tool, where to actually put this code, but the application itself has already put the right address right here plus the key on the clipboard. And so if I want to go ahead and use this, I can just go ahead and say, sure, go ahead and copy it. And now when I go into Xcode, I just paste it. And that's actually this instance. It's not an example of what to do. It's this instance. So I'm basically set up and ready to go. Now, with this, I can also do some other stuff. If I go into data, I don't have any tables. Let's go ahead and create one. We can call this, let's call this a to-do. I can also now start picking permissions. And so, again, not a lot of extra configuration and stuff to go do. I can basically say, let's do a to-do table. And we can call it to-do list or something like that right here. Go ahead and click OK. And that will provision a new table inside of the SQL database that I created. I don't have any records or columns. If I go into the columns over here, I can basically now just start, you know, putting in new information, that kind of stuff. So I've got an index on here. You get the idea. We've all created tables before. But I can actually now start going through and adding columns to that SQL database that I just had created. So I now have the database. I've got table up there. I can start putting sample data inside of it. I can now actually start using that in order to program against it. Now, rather than having you watch me sit here and type a whole bunch of schema, I actually have a version of this that's already up and running with a table in here. It's got the to-do item in here. It's already got the columns and content in here. In fact, if I click on browse right here, we'll be able to actually see the core content that's already there. So those are records that are already inside of the table. Now, if I click this one back here, let's actually take a look up at the front of how do I actually go use this thing. So I'm going to go over to Windows Store, and we'll grab this piece and say, let's go create a new Windows Store application. Now, in this case, we'll actually walk you through a sample if you'd like to go do that. I've already done that. And I can actually pick code. We've already got a version of this. So I'm going to go ahead and say download, and let's do a save as. And let's call this, we'll call this number one right here. I've already done this obviously once. So now that that's completed, I've now got a completely working application. So let's go ahead and extract this out to this directory. Then just go ahead and double click it. So what it's done, again, is it's generated the default application for Windows 8. In this case, a C# XAML application. You can also use HTML and JavaScript, take your pick. It's actually already customized the application with the key and the URL that's required to connect to the mobile service, giving me the source code for it, and I now have a default application. If I go in here, open up the main page, it's going to be a very simple page. We'll pull up the designer, turn off the device piece. This application already has access to the data inside of that. So, you know, let's double click this. Very simple. In this case, I've got, you know, an item, whether it's complete or not, very straightforward. We're also, in this case, using both the async support for .NET Framework 4.5, in this case on the front end, but we can also use the same thing on the back end if you've got people using that code as well. And so I can just go in and start running some link queries, pull back the data. In this case, give me all the items out of the table that haven't been completed. Those are presumably items that I'd like to put in your to-do list. That's it. It's ready to go. So if I just go ahead and click run, this will go ahead and build the application itself. Go ahead and launch it on my Windows 8 machine right here. And here's my app. So if I can say, grab coffee after talk, and go ahead and save that. And here I have items that are done or not, and mark them off and refresh. So it's not a very exciting application, but you see the example of what you can do with it. We'll go ahead and stop this guy. Let me click back over here. Here's my mobile services. This was my application. So if I go back over to data and go to my to-do table, you saw we added one new record. If I go ahead and do the browse on top of this guy, then it'll go back and pull the records that are inside of the table so I can see exactly what's in there. And here's my new record. So very straightforward. I didn't have to spend a bunch of time in DDL. I didn't have to spend a bunch of time in interactive tools. Of course, I could do all those things, especially if I'm doing a big production kind of system. But if you're just trying to get an app up and running and get going, this is the great way to get started. And of course, we support full SQL. So this is just the entry-level example. You can move all the way back up. Now, after that, we do support several other things in here as well. So, for example, I showed you the column pieces. The other thing we do is we allow you to do some really simple scripting on the back end. This is just JavaScript code. And basically, if you don't want to stand up a full web server for your app, you can basically just go into this tab, and we'll give you the CRUD operations that are going to get run anytime something comes through. In our case, we did an insert. So this particular method will get called anytime my client application, if I entered that new record and I said save, it went to the back end and it was going to save it into the database. That's just a normal insert into table. But in this particular case, we're actually running this script on the back end. I can now put custom code, validation code on the back end. I can do any additional work that I'd like. Just go type it in. We'll run it for you. And you didn't have to provision anything but the mobile service, so I'm up and running. I could also use this for some simple, role-based, kind of security, those sorts of things. Make sure you actually, have permissions and access to the data that I'm trying to show you. So I can pull any of that content back, and there you go. So for right now, like I showed you, we've got the push tab here. Let me show you that very quickly. This one allows you to actually go back and do the push information. So if you've got notification service, like in the case of Windows, the Windows notification service, if I wanted to push to the live tile on my main home page, I could simply go wire it up right here. I'd go up to the Windows 8 where my app is published. I'd go grab my package SID and the client secret. Those are settings that they give you when you publish. Just go stick them right in here, and I can now use the push. Same thing with Apple push notifications. So if you're publishing an iOS application and you like to push notifications down, go grab the same information from the Apple site where you submitted the app, go ahead and plug that into this content, and now once again, I can write these things in the back end. So some of that easy scripting that I showed you, if a new record got created and it was of a particular type and you wanted to notify someone, I could write some code that says, hey, if you ever insert the following kind of record, I'm interested in that. Let me go ahead and launch, and I'm going to go ahead and do a push, and you let the notification services from either Microsoft or Apple go ahead and take care of that for you. So now I've got push notifications, and I didn't actually have to do a ton of extra stuff. And they'll have the normal stuff that you'd expect, so scale and configuration. Basically trying to, once again, how can I make this, since if you're going to do these modern applications, this is the kind of stuff you wind up doing. And I have done all this stuff myself. I actually wrote a full block tutorial on push notifications when Windows Phone first came out. It's a pain in the butt. If you have to actually stitch everything together, all the protocols, pass the keys back and forth, keep your connection open, those things get recycled all the time. I mean, it's client programming, right? I mean, you get disconnected. The internet isn't always there. You have these problems. So these are the sorts of things we'd love for you to not have to spend a ton of your time having to do directly, and that's what we're trying to enable here. So far what you saw, you saw that we have Windows Store, Windows Phone App, and iOS. What you should expect is over time, we'll continue to expand this out so you can get to the most popular platforms that are there. There's probably one little robot missing. You're probably going, what about that? Yes, that's probably a very popular target. Once again, we're moving very fast. The mobile services, it's actually only been out for, 5 or 6 months, and we actually, every 2 months, added a new target. And so when I talked before about continuous services, my entire team is doing that. So we've got basically teams that are shipping every 3 weeks. We plan a sprint, we go ahead and execute against it, and we publish it, and you get new features. That is the constant level of innovation we're doing. That's why you'll pretty much keep hitting the website, because you're going to see new stuff all the time. So look for new ones up there. All right, so far, what we've seen is how to go ahead and use VMs for maximum control, websites and REST APIs, hooking up mobile and mobile services and those sort of things. Got just a couple of things left in our time, and we'll make sure we end on time here, to show you the last pieces you can go do. Next piece, cloud services. So how do we do this? This is our PaaS offering. So I just showed you the examples of domain-specific, mobile and websites. What if you want to go create a much richer kind of PaaS offering? I want to write cloud services that run in every, on an interval, wake up, do some processing and move on, and maybe even complex graphs of these services that work together. Service bus queues, workflow, long-running workflows, those sorts of things. These are pieces that are pretty common to a very large application. So cloud services make it possible for you to do that. Once again, we want to be able to infinitely scale the apps, get the services out there, multi-tier support, all the stuff built in, and we don't want you to have to spend a ton of time in app management. So what do we do with this? Well, once again, the process is the same. I can pull up Visual Studio, I can create a project, I can add multiple worker roles to it. When I go do that work, we'll actually take that application that you did, including its definition. Here's the services, here's what's required, and we put it up into a service package. The package itself, it's a deployment unit. It's something we can go kick out there. So when we go off and actually deploy this, we will go in and provision virtual machines in the cloud, and we'll make sure that you actually have a couple so they're redundant. So they're in different update domains. That way, if you have a particular outage or another sorts of issue, we'll actually keep your stuff up and running. We'll go ahead and deploy that code. So once we pick it out, you can pick how many instances you want. In this case, I may say, look, I want a couple of redundant instances, and now I've got four total. So if one rack goes out, I still have the other two, those sorts of things. We go ahead and deploy that package to the system. Now your code's up and running. Again, there's nothing special for you to do. The package was created as part of your development process, and I basically said deploy. We go off and go do the updates for you. Once that code is there, it's deployed, then we'll spin up the network load balancer for you, and we'll actually make sure that you've got multiple paths. And with traffic management, you can decide how much you want to push through there, so you can make sure that it scales. So if I get tons and tons of users coming through, I can actually scale up that level of support. The nice thing about this is if something does go wrong, hardware fails, you've got a problem, someone needs to go pull the disk out there, there's no ticket to go file. I don't have to go through some kind of escalation portal. The Azure software actually is designed to catch this stuff. And if we do have a particular problem, again, you had some redundancy already, so it's already available, highly available, we'll go ahead and spin up a new instance. We'll redeploy the package onto the new instance, and then we'll go reroute the network load balancer to that new instance, and you shouldn't notice any downtime with that. So it just keeps on running. Big mantra on here, we want you to be able to focus on your app and not the infrastructure. Because if you have to spend a ton of time down in the guts, maybe you need to do that depending upon what your solution looks like, how complicated your solution is, et cetera. But ideally, if you can just go in and actually work on the code that only you can actually write and not on a bunch of the other pieces, man, it's got to make life just significantly better. That's our hope with the technology. Now, as part of this, what we're doing is we're giving you tons of building blocks. We already covered some of these. We showed a little bit on the storage piece. I just talked about the traffic piece over here. We have CDN. You saw that in the worldwide components, our networking, storage, compute, identity, those sort of content. In addition to that, last week, we also went to general availability with our media services site. So you can actually do media encoding and streaming, and we support all sorts of devices. So we're finding lots of people, like you have to encode content maybe 120 different ways for form factors, bit rates, those sorts of things. We actually do that as a finished service. You can just walk up to the site, go create one, start uploading your content. There's your endpoint. We'll do smooth streaming for you, handle all the rest of that. So you'll see more of these components. Now you can start actually building your application out of this. So when we say Cloud OS, it's the way to think about it. The whole cloud and its building blocks become your operating system, as opposed to I've got one process over here that does this, right? That's really the top level advantage that we think we can give you. Okay, one last piece of technology here, SQL database. So we've also, and again, you could create a VM, you can install SQL Server in that, but we also wanted to make it simple for you to go in and actually just create a SQL database and just go up and get started. In fact, you saw me create one as a side effect of that mobile service when I said, hey, just give me a database. And honestly, this is full SQL Server. It's clustered, so we've got primary and secondary on top of it. It's fully managed service that Microsoft runs, so we take care of patching, we take care of all the software updates, make sure your content is there. You can get SQL reporting, against it. That's what makes it simple. Very, very quick. What the heck can you do with it? Once again, we'll go back over to our portal. I'm going to click on the database tab. And I guess the interesting question is, how long does it usually take you to get a database in your environment? How many forms you have to fill out, you know, how many, like that sort of stuff. So if I want to get up and go running, you know, it'd be nice if you could create one, you know, pretty easily. Let's do ALM Summit P. We'll just create this. I can pick a server that I want to run on. You know, sure, we'll go ahead and run it on that guy. That's fine. And I'm going to go ahead and do a create database. What this is doing is going up to SQL, and it's saying, hey, I'd like a new database. Please go ahead and create one for me. And we're done. So I now have a SQL server up in the cloud, ready to go. If I go ahead and click that guy, then I have its access to it right here. It is already up and running. It's provisioned, you know, using SQL Server. This is SQL Server, the latest version. And I can just simply go grab the connection strings. From here, I could go copy this, go paste it in my code, my tool, you know, my application, whatever it needed to have, and I'm good to go. So literally in 60 seconds, I've got a new SQL Server running up in the cloud, and I can start programming against the thing and go back and pull it through. And this is, the, like I said, normal SQL Server. Once we get it up and running, we start, you know, working against it. I think I've got, you know, let's take a look at another one that I've got out here. Different databases, I can put this stuff in here. I can scale, you know, I can look at being able to partition and shard and get, you know, basically higher numbers up here because it's full-blown SQL Server. It's just that we're doing the hosting for you so you can get going. So I think you can see, like, you know, if I were picturing myself doing, like, a request for proposal, I'd like to go get an app up and running, you know, picture all the steps that are required for that. And if what I really want to do, especially, like, in my department or something, is I just want to go try this stuff out. Go click the free trial. Go off and create it. With a few clicks and less than an hour here, actually, we've been able to build, you know, a couple of applications and get going. And by the way, like I mentioned at the start, this is our enterprise software. So these aren't special one-off little hack versions. Like, this is SQL Server. This is Windows Server. This is our virtualization technology. So not little Express products or anything like that. It's the full-blown versions. We're just making them available in this kind of self-service cloud environment and the public cloud, so that it's really simple for you to get up and get running. Okay, so that gets us, you know, basically all the way down to data. So we've taken a very, very quick tour. So just to wrap up, we get you done on time, off the breaks, and for the rest of your day. Again, trying to make flexible. Hopefully you saw lots of examples of flexibility in the system. Open, you saw different examples with Linux and protocols, those sort of things. I didn't show it on here, but in the SQL case, we also have a fully distributed cache as well, which supports Memcached protocol. So if you're also doing lots of caching and those sort of things, that's another service we put on top of your data that you can have. And hopefully you can see how we're building the thing to be robust, you know, self-service, all that sort of content as well. Very easy to get started. Just go up and hit windowsazure.com. Like I mentioned, if you're an MSDN subscriber, you already have rights, so you can just go ahead and sign in. But we still have a free trial anyway, so if you want to try it for 90 days. And like I showed you, there's lots of free examples in here. The websites, for example, mobile services, you can pretty much keep those perpetually free. It's only when you actually scale up and want more content or more volume behind it that you'd have to actually do additional work. So, Very easy to get started. Hopefully that was a helpful overview for you. So with that, we are out of time. I'm going to hand it back over to Keith and say thank you very much.
Thank you, Jason.